about, you know, how you transmit and the extent to which the mode of your, or the methodology or the mode or the strategy of your use of language, you know, what that reflects about different also areas of Torah and Halacha, as well as more broadly. So this is really, again, a very, very fruitful topic, which requires much more elaborate treatment. This Gemara in the beginning of Psachim, which integrates, you know, treatment of Ketzara, brevity, and Meguna, you know, the question of the propriety or the, you know, the kind of language, refined language, the avoidance of improper language, even negative language. This is one of, you know, this is an important sugya for this question. And the fact that the Torah, the fact that these two are connected, namely the question of brevity and the question of the quality, refinement quality of the language, is itself a bit of a chiddush. It sounds like they're connected, not just that they're two different factors that sometimes, of course, they sometimes compete, but it sounds like it's all connected. At least I think it's all connected. And if indeed, you know, it's about the power of language and the role that language plays in human identity and in spiritual persona and the spiritual potential of human identity, then the fact that that these will combine is truly, you know, something that, you know, I wouldn't say it's predictable, but it's truly something that is very reasonable, you know, for sure. It's interesting, again, this idea that language you know, may play this kind of a role, you know, that in terms of articulation, that it's not just the means of expressing what is in your mind, is something which I think is implicit in Chazal, but I just came across it again recently going through the Parsha with the Malbim a little bit, that in Perek Beis, Pasuk Ches, in Bereishis, the Malbim was trying to just, you know, relate to a very basic question. How did man survive, you know, immediately in the aftermath of creation? After all, he makes the point that unlike Bali Chaim, whose survival skills and whose capacity in terms of survival is all instinctive and built in, right? Seemingly, that's not the case for man. That's an interesting irony. Man is intended, you know, to cultivate and to learn, you know, and through a ongoing process, you know, become, you know, self-sufficient, right? Both his food, his shelter, his motor capacity, right? Unlike, you know, most of the animal world, you know, is not part of his natural state. I think it's a, you know, it's known, but it's a very fascinating, if man is the sea, Sin Yud Aleph, if he's the apex of creation, the fact that he, you know, requires the largest investment and learning curve, even to accomplish, you know, the most elemental and the most, you know, basic requirements is ironic, right? Clearly intentional as well, because man's supposed to strive, man's supposed to grow. He's supposed to outstrip, you know, the animals and the plants, you know, and live a life of purpose and meaning, you know, and therefore he's meant to more than survive. And the way in which he survives, you know, is intended to be a way which also allows him to flourish and to make his mark and to establish an independent identity. So in order to do that, you know, he has initial obstacles, you know, due to not being naturally endowed, you know, to accomplish all these things. Again, the Malbim doesn't say all this. He says it in a few words. I think that's what he's saying. I'm elaborating a little bit. But the learning curve is a function of the greater aspiration of way outstripping even in these areas. And of course, going beyond subsistence and survival, you know, in all respects. So, but you know, this is the fact, this is the phenomenon of human beings. A baby that is born, you know, in the human world, can't walk immediately and can't, you know, basically would not be able to survive alone, you know, in the world. And again, man wouldn't be able to feed himself. You know, the whole, you know, the whole question is a fascinating question. But either way, the Malbin, in, you know, discusses this just to raise the question, like, what was the expectation that upon creation, man would simply be able to begin his existence, given that, you know, his independence, you know, when it comes to nourishment and shelter and even in motor ability, all of this requires that kind of an investment. So one of the things that he talks about is Dibur. Like, how is Adam HaRishon able to speak, you know, immediately? After all, you know, a baby that's born can't communicate in a significant way immediately. And in explaining this phenomenon, right, he, I'm the wrong parak, so much in the first parak. In explaining this phenomenon, he just, you know, has a couple of words about Koach HaDibur. So he says that, just let me find it. This is Pasuk Ches, I believe. He says the following. Ve'ech ba lo ha-musag ha-rishon she-yeda le-daber. Halo ha-dibur kulo musagim kololim mifshatim, meaning abstract things, min ha-muchashim ha-pratiyim she-afshit mehem et ha-inyan ha-kolel kanoda. Ulezeh tzorech limud zman rav lo tekef be'esi baro. So I think it's just, again, I was, you know, I'm very sensitive to this question, so I just picked up on it. But I guess the probably the most prominent, you know, writer about, you know, linguistics and language theory, you know, in the present, in the contemporary scene, is a professor named Steven Pinker, who's written a lot of books about language, and they're really very fascinating books. And his, you know, big yesod, talking about linguistics, you know, and the building blocks of language, is to try to demonstrate that as culturally influenced as language is, all the cultures of language really draw upon seemingly like a common matrix. And that matrix is basically a very advanced and already developed thought structure, because the syntax of any language and the content, of course, of language already presupposes that there is some sort of keen understanding, you know, of experiences, you know, and concepts and an interface between the abstract, you know, and the, you know, and the real. And the fact that children, you know, can begin to speak as early as they do, frankly, again, Malbim was emphasizing the fact that they're not born with the capacity of communication, but the speed with which they develop it and the common foundation of all languages, you know, kind of highlights the fact that there's like a race memory, if you will, of, you know, in the brain, like a neurological framework, you know, that language taps into. So the reason I'm mentioning all this is very consistent with the idea of Unkelus, of, you know, of Nefesh Chayim, Nefesh Chaya being Ruach Memalala, and the expansion of that, as we've been discussing it, you know, that it's not only what communication is not only what distinguishes man, you know, technically, but again, the implications of communication and the sophistication of language and everything that goes along with it, and especially the notion that articulation, as I say, is a form of advanced thinking and advancing your personal thinking, that you grow and you evolve when you articulate and when you struggle with how to use language. All of this, as well as the other things that we mentioned, the fact that it implies interaction and impact, you know, on others. All the things that we spoke about, minakoach, elapoal, and so on. All of this, you know, comes, I think, together to underscore why it is that Chazal say that the world was created with words, asara mamarim, that, you know, the Torah, which is words, Torah shebichtav, very precise words, the most precise words, divine words, words which are also shemosav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that they become the blueprint of the world, that touching those words is touching the Rabbanu Shalom himself, like Dvar Hashem, the Achdut HaMaskil VaHamuskal, and of course the interplay between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh is again the interplay between concepts, abstract principles, and words and language and precise language. So all of this, you know, when in the world of Greek philosophy, right, you know, the logos, you know, is something that conveys, you know, basically higher thought and more. And again, that comes from a long-standing, you know, tradition, Ba'ere Tev B'Shivim Lashon, that, you know, really comes from the creation of the world, Ba'asara Mamarim. So in light of that, you know, to examine things in the world of halakha, like, you know, when, as we discussed yesterday, when you say here Kedibur, when do you say Ksiva is Kedibur, you know, when do you say Shomea Ka'ona, frankly, where you need Dibur, but you can attach yourself to someone else's Dibur. And when is someone else's Dibur your Dibur? When is there only personal Dibur, you know, as opposed to shared, you know, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zel Hazeh type, you know, Dibur. And what are the rules in Lashon HaKodesh and Targum? All of these things, you know, become understandable. You know, when do you have to hear what you're saying, you know, to influence yourself, to be Shomea, you know, La'aznav, and Tfilah, which is Belachash, but that still requires articulation, you know, Chituch Sefasav. All of these distinguishing aspects of man that are further, like, developed in the norms of the halacha and different contexts, different requirements. When do you require Tfilah Belachash, and when do you require Kol Ram, frankly? And when are you Mekatzer? You know, and when are you Ma'arich? And when do you say Dibra Torah Kelashon B'nei Adam? You know, and when do you say not at all, as we discussed a little bit yesterday? Halachically, what concessions do you make, you know, for accuracy, for the sake of conveying, you know, to people, you know, or being more influential? These are all, you know, very related topics, very nuanced, but very related. The whole program of the Malbim, really the program of the Gra that the Malbim, you know, implemented, which was a rejection of the more flexible, let's say, medieval, you know, Kefal Hadvarim, you know, Bilashon Acher, the idea that there are synonyms, you know, in Torah Shebichtav, the Gra basically, you know, on a certain level at least, you know, denied it. And the Malbim spent his lifetime, you know, and poured in enormous mental energy, as did many others, you know, in discriminating, you know, very, very subtly, you know, between what appeared to be synonyms. But in a way, there's a philosophy of language perspective that underpins that whole question, you know, specifically with regard to Torah Shebichtav, for sure, but with regard to, again, the importance of, the power of, and, you know, the proper use of language in a bigger and broader way. When Chazal tell us the truth, which is that it's very remarkable that certain major institutions in the Torah are kind of just barely alluded to, beremez, you know, and they're hanging by a thread, the Sugya and Chagiga, like in Yanei Shabbos, which could not be more important, as we know, you know, Tachlis Mase Shamayim Va'aretz. And maybe a way to look at the world is to look at it as, you know, really having been created fully on Shabbos, because that's, man is born on Yom HaShishi. But anyways, Shabbos doesn't need my, you know, my askama. Everybody knows the centrality, Shabbos, Tchilo de Mikroi Kodesh, etc. But Dinei Shabbos, again, what's fascinating is that the institution of Shabbos is ubiquitous in the Torah. It's all over the place. And the Rambam and the Ramban talk about why so many parshios, you know, it's at from the very beginning, and many times, you know, in Bereishis in the beginning, and then, you know, several times in Shmos, and again in Vayikra, and, you know, Dvarim. We have numerous parshas of Shabbos, but the details of Shabbos, which are what count, are, you know, according to the Sugya and Chagiga, barely hanging by a thread. Right? We wouldn't know the Lama Tesavos Melachos if not for Smichos Parshios with the Mishkan. And, you know, even then, Torah just says, Kol Melacha, and, you know, do they mean, you know, fill in the blanks? Or do they mean something more generic and general? That's a lumdish question with important consequences too. But at the end of the day, I'm just trying to highlight, you know, these, on the one hand, you have a skimpy Torah Shebichsav, you know, treatment of Shabbos. There must be a point to that. Not just the saving of ink, you know, and preserving of, you know, the kolmos, because, again, I spoke about this at Shalosh Shudas for, you know, a short time. And that is that Chazal say that, you know, much ink and many quills, you know, were sacrificed, you know, to repeat the word B'nei Ches, you know, 10 times in the negotiation over Ma'aras HaMachpelah. And Chazal say that the Sicha, you know, of the Eved of Avram Avinu, you know, is more important than many other things, because it gets a huge amount of press in Psukim, in Parshas Chayisara, you know, and we wonder, like, what is that all about? So this kind of duality, you know, that you have critical institutions in halachic life that are barely, you know, explicated. Some of them are only beremes. Again, all clearly, you know, intentional. It's our job, you know, as Lomdei Torah, you know, and Ovdei Hashem, you know, to pour our mental energy into trying to understand, you know, these choices. You know, of course, to understand, you know, the words of the Mishnah and the halacha in front of us, but also these kind of meta-halachic or meta-hashkafic issues. That's also part of our mission. So why is it that, you know, certain narratives get, you know, spoken of and others, again, I mentioned on Shabbos, you know, Avram Avinu's, you know, quest for monotheism, which any of us would love to read, right? And for that, we have to rely on the Medrash. You know, and Ur Kastim is not there. But the Sichas, you know, Avdo, you know, and the every Hishtachava and Shmoenu Adoni, you know, and so on, you know, of the negotiation with Ephron is there. Obviously, there's a reason for that. And we could, you know, speculate, I think, intelligently in many cases as to why that is so. But all of this takes on enormous significance, you know, once we know that, you know, Lashon Ketzara and Lashon, you know, Meguna, that Lashon in general, that language, of course, especially in Torah Shebichsav. Our Gemara itself on Dav Gimel says, oh, maybe it's be mechalek between Lishna Doraisa and Dinim and Lishna Dorabanan, or and what about Sicha Sechulin? Of course, our gradations. But even within Torah Shebichsav itself, you know, it's clear that, you know, that the decisions are made, you know, that we need to reconstruct and understand, you know, their meaning. In the end of the day, I mean, the large strokes are that the things that are baremas are there are baremas intentionally, you know, either because you need a mesorah, and therefore the scrupulous perspective of preserving a mesorah in order to observe properly, you know, or in order to, again, punctiliously and also conceptually properly. Moreover, sometimes being bikitsara, you know, has the effect of explaining to you, you know, that what looks very diverse, you know, really has a common denominator, like Melachas Shabbos and so on. Whereas, you know, the Shmainus and the Bnei Cheses and the Sichas, you know, Eliezer, which may seem trivial, end up being amazing case studies in how to navigate, you know, hashkafically and halachically fraught, you know, situations. Again, something for those who were there that I briefly tried to discuss at Shalashudas. Namely, how do you satisfy, you know, the present and the future, your individual needs, you know, and your status as a leader, you know, what you want to accomplish and, you know, the way you're being perceived, you know, in terms of Kiddush and Chilul Hashem by others. How do you balance being a ger, you know, and a toshav? And all of these things. And in the case of Eliezer, when, you know, is diplomacy and strategic language, even if it kind of not misrepresents, but let's say shifts the emphasis, you know, the story that happened and the story he told, you know, and in a way similar to what I was discussing a little bit yesterday. I was talking about, you know, the Rambam and the Ravid and the Chovas Halvavos on anthropomorphism. Like sometimes if you're very strict and precise and theologically true, you can also end up, you know, precluding an accurate transmission of the effect or of the real, you know, themes that you're trying to, right? You want to, you know, inspire people about Avinu Malkeinu, you know, and you're using only philosophic language, you know, which is so removed from that, so that they don't even have an opportunity to understand what you're talking about. So in Eliezer, you know, when we hear the story and then we hear the rendition, and we know there are discrepancies, and many of them are different emphases, and some of them are different orders, you know, so in a way, Eliezer is telling the story to be diplomatic, to be effective, to accomplish the mission. That in fact, that's a factor in its own right. And in some cases, unquestionably, he is being technically imprecise in order to be, you know, more precise in conveying, you know, the proper, you know, intentions and interrelationships, taking into account, you know, his audience. These are all examples, but these are the questions. The use of language, you know, heightens, and the role of language heightens, of course, the Torah Shabbat Sav even more, heightens, you know, all of these questions. So, for example, again, the Torah uses targum in some cases, like Yigar Sadusa, or, you know, Totafos, you know, Tat Bekatvi. Yigar Sadusa is, you know, one of my favorites, because the Torah already says Galed, and then they speak about it as Yigar Sadusa. And Chazal say, you should know, Yigar Sadusa, that has Kedusha too. Of course it has Kedusha too. It's in the Torah Shebichsav. So what does that mean? But I think what it means is, it was the Torah's amazing way of saying that, you know, two people can use the same phrase, you know, and refer to the same place, right, and have very different, you know, cultural underpinnings. So it was Yigar Sadusa for Lavan, you know, it was important to formulate it that way. You know, it was important so that Yaakov Avinu could change it into Gal Eid, and so on. So, you know, the use of language in every way is something which is part of the enterprise of Torah itself. Nasa Adam, first things that we hear about man, you know, challenge, you know, the relationship between, you know, accuracy and philosophical accuracy and theological accuracy, you know, and conveying also midos tovos. When Chazal say nasa adam, you know, is the language of rabbim. Some say it's the royal we, you know, and others say that you know, the Rashi quotes, of course, the Medrash, that, you know, it's a consultation with the Malachim that was necessary, and even one which runs the risk of implying, you know, that there are multiple gods or multiple creators, you know, but that also has the benefit of highlighting humility. So again, when you're, you know, what really is the right balance, you know, between theological accuracy and precluding people from, you know, theological error, which, you know, could be catastrophic, certainly for the Rambam, you know, but the Rambam knows the Medrash and the Rambam is not critical of the Medrash. You know, how do you balance that, you know, risk, you know, with also the Musar Haskel of Anvas Anuso? And when, you know, the Torah, you know, according to many of the Mefarshim, you know, implies inaccurately, you know, about when, where Terach ended up and where he died and when he died, you know, etc. So again, Chazal say that that's an inaccuracy that, you know, in order to convey, you know, or in order to kind of inoculate, you know, Avram Avinu from the criticism, you know, that he wasn't a very good son, and that here he was, Mr. Chesed, you know, but he turned his back, you know, on his ancient, you know, father, on his elderly father. Doesn't charity begin, you know, at home? So again, that's a fascinating, I mean, there are thousands of these, right? And, you know, when the Torah says, you know, Avram left the Ribbono Shel Olam left Avram, right? How accurate is it, you know, given the theological parts as opposed to the, you know, the true story of what really took place? So in all cases, there's no whitewashing, and the Torah is not inaccurate, you know, ever in its own right. What the Torah wanted to, don't think that Avram Avinu neglected his father. Thinking that undermines who Avram Avinu was and what his actual relationship was with his father, more so than, you know, having to figure out based on, you know, a challenging textual presentation, you know, what it is that really took place. And if it takes a little bit of risk, you know, theologically, in order to make the point of komakom shatamotze gedulaso atamotze anvasanuso, then parshanut wise, you know, that is a correct call. Again, you know, we try to study these, you know, and to try to emulate them, you know, and to apply them. You know, we're also reconstructing. These are decisions that the Ribbono Shel Olam made, you know, in Torah Shebichtav. But again, the role of language and the serious or the gravity as reflected in our Gemara, like, you know, how many letters are you going to sacrifice or words, you know, for the principle of Lashon Meguna? And especially but there are some exceptions where we do, because we need to get that out. And especially if we think that brevity and refinement come from the same place, which I think we do, then in particular, you know, an occasional exception to the rule in order to establish the principle, which internally are two sides of the same coin, you know, that becomes not only justified, but, you know, really critical, very necessary, etc. Again, Ramban's view is that, and the other side of it, that, you know, Avram's monotheistic quest, the Ramban at the end of Parshas Noach, is omitted because it would have been, you know, wrong. It would have been necessary to kind of articulate, you know, the debate over the Ribbono Shel Olam's existence. That's itself very fascinating. And that would have been inappropriate because it would give, you know, seeming, you know, value, you know, to the other side. So better omit it. So these are all really fascinating windows into the Torah's editorial decisions, whether it's what is in. Again, I spoke on Shabbos about, you know, why do we conclude with Chaya Sara? Why don't we just end the Avram Avinu narrative, you know, at the Akedah? And what I was suggesting was that because, you know, for the reasons that we just talked about, the B'nai Cheses and the Sichas Eliezer and so on, there are critical, you know, lessons still to be learned. But of course, the Torah doesn't register everything that happened in the life of Avram Avinu. It doesn't register everything that happened in the beginning. It omits crucial information. And there were many things that happened, you know, clearly at the end that are also omitted. And therefore, the decision, you know, of what to and not include, what bekitzur and what, you know, be'arichus, you know, the order of things, the presentation, all of these become part of Limud HaTorah. All of them share in common a tremendous reverence and respect for the text, for language generally, and a recognition that the stakes in Torah generally, and, you know, in each of these cases, is very high. Because you would want to, you know, accurately convey theology and philosophy and history, you know, but also at the same time, you know, unequivocally, you know, character traits that need to be emulated and a portrayal of the paradigms and role models, you know, Maisav Osim Labanim. And the tension in doing that, in precluding misconceptions, in promoting, you know, truth, technical truth, narrow truth, but also in some cases, bigger truths, the truths, you know, they'll go beyond the facts, you know, the truths that reflect, you know, truly the characters, you know, and the motivations, the things that are supposed to be instructive, the Dori Doros. That's a tremendously challenging endeavor. And the Torah does that, you know, parsha after parsha, you know, in such a fascinating way. That's why Parsha Nud is endless, and the insights are endless, and they build on each other. And that's why, you know, the Torah is always new and always dynamic, and there's always a room for Chiddush and for further insight. So these are really some of the issues that I wanted to just expand upon. So that's in terms of that. I just wanted to also add very quickly before we move on that it's just curious and interesting to note that the Shari Tshuva, Rabbeinu Yonah, also formulates the importance of language. Although for him, the key things are busha and tznius, what you want to accomplish through a proper use of language. He too suggests that language is a vehicle that reflects, but it sounds to me like what he means is also contributes and facilitates the intellect. So it's the combination of midos tovos, you know, that a person, you know, should be cultivating, busha and tznius, as well as, again, the intellectual element that he emphasizes. And it's interesting that he focuses on, particularly on the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos. One second, let's see if I can find this. The Gemara in Masechet Shabbos about Nivol Peh being particularly objectionable. Hachelek HaChamishi, this is in Shari Tshuva, Shar Shlishi Reish Chof Tes. Hachelek HaChamishi, Navlus HaPeh. That's how he introduces. According to Gemara in Shabbos, Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, Kol Menabelus Piv Afilu Nigzar Al Gzardin Shel Shivim Shana LaTova Nefach Alav LaRa'a. Amar Yeshaya Al Kain Al Bachurav Lo Yismach Adonai Ve'as Yisoma Ve'as Ma'amun Asav Lo Yirachem Ki Cholo Chanef Umeira V'Chol Peh Dover Nevala. B'chol zot lo shava po, ve'od yado netuya. Ubav Rizo says, Rabbeinu Yonah, ha'menabalus piv keved ovon v'nita v'nelach, ki ozav v'hinia chabusha, hatznius, shein amidos hayiduos lezera hakodesh. V'holach al shvile azas ponim, shein midas hanevalim aroim. V'ashenis, ki chilel es kodesh Yisrael, shenemer v'omru rak am chacham v'navon, hagoya gadol azeh. So the first point is busha and tznius, which he speaks of very strongly. And the next point is that improper language undercuts Klal Yisrael or a person's reputation as a chacham v'navon. V'zeh nahag al derech haskalim hanimasim hamruchakim miderech haskel shekulo yafe af na'im v'ala v'asham v'ta'al tachanasam. That's the point I wanted to get across. Asher hu yakar mikol kli chemda. Shenemar hu kli yakar sifse das, according to the pasuk in Mishlei. So the idea that language is, you know, a key component in intellectual development. And in the intellectual uniqueness of man, and even more so in the Jewish people, is something. Then he goes on to add the Omer Rabbeinu, but again within this section, because he too thinks that there's a connection. La'olam ayot yadam davar meguna mipiv, quoting our Gemara in Psachim, shar ike makosif shmona osios, and given again the value of every a dot and jot, and certainly every letter and word. In the Torah, that is a big thing. This is the Rishonim here, Al-Atar, have a very interesting discussion. Some of you asked me about this after Shir. Like, what's so terrible about saying behema, you know, tmeya? Just a kashrus thing. Just don't the Rishonim say no. What we object to is behema tmeya that implies that the reason that they're not kosher or appropriate for karbonos is because, you know, Chazal say that the behavior of some species of animals, you know, at the early history of the world, you know, before the Mabul, you know, is what dictated, you know, kosher, non-kosher animals. So some of the Rishonim here say, yeah, being not kosher, that's just, you know, positivity and negativity. That wouldn't justify, you know, changing the words of the Torah. But what really is it's the implied, you know, avera, in other words, licentious behavior, and positivity and the negativity alone. Right, so what is the criterion for being considered meguna? And even in the Gemara that we read, we noted that, again, there are different stories. Like, you know, one used a phrase that was, he felt offensive. You know, he said, I don't want to deal with that Talmud anymore. And the other one used a phrase which he felt was like, lefnim mishur sadin, you know, refined. It wasn't a criticism of his counterpart. They said, oh, he'll be a Mora Hara, be Israel. So what is the criterion for, and is there more than one application here? There's refinement, and then there's, you know, crude language, profane language. There's, you know, the justification of you know, not being b'ktzara, or not speaking normally, or in some cases speaking inaccurately. What are the pressures, and what are the counter pressures in all cases? But it's a fascinating discussion. He says, "V'zek kamo gader li hizaher mi nivlos peh." Shehim and averes achamuros. The gam gader li hizaher. Interestingly, hizaher mi siper lashon hara. Odom Rabbeinu Kechayiv Adam Livchar B'Dvarav Lashon Kavod, right? And Lashon Kavod Hu Derech Hadibur V'Asicha Shadarchubo Nikiyei Hadas. Anyway, that's the Rabbeinu Yonah's take on things. Interestingly, the Rambam does not focus so much on Nivul Peh. I don't know what conclusions to draw from it. I don't think he was soft on it, Chalila, at all. I just think it's interesting that the Rambam in general doesn't give so much press to this particular topic. Again, you would expect that he would speak about it more elaborately in Ilchos Deos. He does speak about it in Perek Beis Halacha Dalet. La'olam yar be'adam b'shtika. Here's where the Rambam speaks about it. I'll read in just a second. But what's fascinating is that the Rambam gives much more emphasis to the issue of Lashon Katsara and Aruka than he does to Meguna. It's kimat absent from Yad HaChazaka, interestingly. He speaks about Nivul Peh. He doesn't really give much emphasis to Sugya and Shabbos, except in the context of discussing the marital relationship. So the Rambam says that is something that has to be very refined. The Rambam in Ilchos Deos, Perek Hei Halacha Dalet, you know, and there can be the tendency because of intimacy, the intimate bond and intimate contexts, you know, to kind of be looser or, you know, a little bit more profane. And the Rambam says that that's dafka something that people should be careful about. And he talks about Sicha B'Teila Ma'isha, but he particularly warns about Lo Yinavel Piv, which I think is very fascinating. But again, clearly this is not acceptable in any context, but it's interesting that that's where he focuses on it. But what he does focus on much more is the ideal of shtika, or emor ma'at va'seh harbe, which one would have thought would be a totally different idea. You know, don't get in trouble. Don't be, you know, echad bedibur echad belev. That's hypocrisy, consistency. Don't be all talk, you know, and little deed. What does that have to do with language? That's not a language thing. That's a behavioral thing. That's a, you know, be substantive and be honest and be consistent. But it's interesting that the Rambam thinks that those things are connected to being respectful about language. Ki'ilu, like hyperbole, kind of leads to, you know, emor harbe vas. The emor harbe kind of is consistent with, you know, the asei ma'at. One could have said these are two totally different ideas, but it's interesting that that's what he puts all this together in Perek Beis Halacha Vav in Ilchos Deos. I'm sorry, Perek Beis Halacha Dalet. La'olam yarba adam b'shtika. That's how he starts. Pashtus, that's not what our topic is. V'lo yedaber al ob dvar chachma. Obedvarm shetzarach lem lechai gufo. Omer al Rav, Talmud Rabbeinu Kadosh, shelosach sicha b'teila kol yama. V'zui sicha srov kol adam. V'afilu b'tzarach ha'guf lo yarbe b'dvarim. V'al zet tivu chakamim yomer kolamar b'dvarim mevichet. Omer lo matzasi l'guf tov elu shtika. We know all this, but pashtus, this is a different sugya. But not for the Rambam. V'chein b'divrei tor b'divrei chachma yu divrei ha'chacham ma'atim v'inyanehem merubim. That's our Gemara, right? The brevity. That sounds like, no, you can say it in X amount of words, and you can say it in less amount of words. Say it in less amount of words. That's about respect for language, right? Don't use language for your own purposes and be respectful of it. What does that have to do with, you know, not being consistent, or speaking hyperbolically, or speaking, you know, sicha b'teila. or is a sikhla. So zenemar kibachalam barov inyan, the kol ksil barov dvarim. Then he goes on, halacha hei, siag l'chach mashtika, l'fikach lo yimahir l'hashiv lo yarbe l'daber, v'yilamid l'talmidim b'shuva v'nachas, b'lo tz'aka b'lo arichus lashon. Again, divrei Torah b'nachas nishmaim, which is a tone, right? You know, don't be bombastic and hyperbolic and loud, you know, and, you know, attention grabbing, right? Speak in a refined manner and tone. According to the Rambam, that's part of the same halacha as Dibur Katsara, which by extension is also Dibur Maguna. Below Arichus Lashon, Hu Sheshlomo B'Divrei Chacham B'Nachas Nishmai. And then he goes, Asur L'Adam La'Hanig Atzma B'Divrei Chalakutu Pitui, misleading language. And so on. So it's Ella Sfas Emes for Ruach Nachon Velev Tahar Mikol Amal Bava. Okay. And then comes, you know, that he shouldn't be a Bal Schok and a tail and so on. So it's very interesting that the Rambam A plays down the Maguna, practically doesn't speak about it. Practically doesn't speak about the Nevel part, except in the context of Ishus. But what he does think is that, again, respect for language, brevity, and the mode of using language, you know, is something that is a character attribute. And again, in Parakei Halacha Zayin, Ram says, Talmud Chacham lo yitzcho kebehema, el gidiburo should be benachas. I think I read the other day, again, at Shal Shudas, the Raman Helkus Yisari HaTorah, Perakei, the last halacha, where Yud Aleph speaks about, again, you know, Kiddush Hashem, Dibur B'nachas Imabrios. According to the Rambam, that's all part, all these things are connected. So that too is a very fascinating thing. Okay, we'll stop. I wanted to speak about Ben Noach. Let me just tell you what I want to say about Ben Noach, and then we'll continue with it tomorrow. That's for Dibur. There's so much more to say, but that's enough. Right, we want to be brief. Oh, Stephen, actually, Lieber, brought to my attention, but I just looked at the Rambam. He says, is it a different Gersa that says Talmidav?
I think that was Safaria's Gersa.
Whose Gersa?
It was on Safaria. I didn't check any other Gersaos.
Oh, okay. No, because the one I just read, and then I looked at Shinui Nereskos, I didn't see it. I'll check it again. Stephen had made the Ha'ara to me that the Gemara uses the expression that, you know, when you speak to your Talmido, you should speak Veloshin Katsara. But he thought, or he saw, I guess, maybe Sfaria, I guess I have to catch, that it said Talmidav. And we were just wondering whether Talmido or Talmidav, you know, makes a difference. So I was suggesting that, you know, part of a Loshin Katsara, as opposed to Loshin Aruka, it doesn't mean a short shear and a long shear, I can tell you that. It also doesn't mean that if something requires more elaboration or it's a more complex idea, that it's either wrong or, you know, somehow not worth anybody's while or too big a price to pay, because you should just say the simple thing and go on. You know, I don't think it's conceivable that any, I mean, again, it goes to what I've been talking about today, which is, you know, when you have a clash between substance and precision, or you have, you know, counter pressures in terms of how you can present things. We mentioned very, very quickly a whole bunch of them. So I don't think it means any of those things. But what I do think it means is that you shouldn't be bombastic for no purpose, or certainly not for your own ego. Like, people can, you get carried away, you know, in speaking. And speaking can be, you know, a source, you know, of, you know, demagoguery or, you know, or, you know, power in terms of moving a crowd. You have to use that litova, and you have to be careful, you know, how you use it. Moreover, what dictates katsara or aruka is the need, right? Some things need aruka and some things need katsara. So I was suggesting, I don't know if this is right, but that maybe the Lashon Yachid, Talmido, instead of Talmidav, is that, you know, if you know somebody, you know, and you have a relationship with them, it's also easier to convey to them things in shorthand, in code, right? You know, if you know, you know, my vocabulary, or I know your vocabulary, or even your body language or your background, you know, then, you know, references, you know, could be cultural references, you know, it could be, you know, our past history. Ah, remember what we said in Chulin, you know, on Efshel Levar Tzarech Levarer, boom, right? The point has been made. Or in a family, you know, whatever the context is, sometimes you could speak in code, in shorthand, or you don't need to elaborate. You know, sometimes Kalamosif is Goreya, for sure. Whereas the more people involved or the more diverse your audience, right? Not everybody has the same experiences or not everybody has the same level of understanding. So, you know, if the Rebbe gives a shiur and his Talmidim all learned Chulin with him, you know, except for some guys who learned Bab Metzia with him, you know, so it may not be the same Lashon Katsara, frankly. So that's what I thought. Meaning Lashon Katsara, you know, is something which is most possible on an individual level, typically for somebody who you're familiar with, obviously. But again, in the Girsa here and in the one on the Nuschos here on the page, he also has Talmido. So you'll check it.
I have it here in Safari. It says Talmido.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know where he gets it from, but that's what it has.
Okay. I'll look at. We'll have to look. Look in the Frankel. In the back where they have, here they have Shinui Nuschos. I think there they have a bigger one always in the back. Yalkut Shinui Nuschos. Let me know. It's interesting. Again, it's a small enough difference that it might not matter, but I agree with you. It's intriguing. That's how I was going to explain it anyway. Okay. So I'm sorry we took all the time for that, but I think it's an important topic. It's a much bigger topic than this, but I wanted to provide Rashi Prakim, you know, maybe we'll elaborate. I think these are the Rashi Prakim. These are the things to think about in Torah Shebichtav, in, you know, halachic discourse, in regular discourse, etc. These are some of the main issues. The next thing I want to discuss tomorrow is the two questions about Hahu Arma. One, why did the Arma deserve the death penalty? and that touches a little bit also on Shev Mitzvah B'nai Noach, which I want to talk about. And the second one, what is the relationship between the requirements of Aliyah L'Regel and Korban Pesach? Okay? So that I want to talk about tomorrow, and then I want to talk about these other things that we also didn't yet finish. A little bit about that Avelis question. I want to speak a little bit about the problem of Zeruza Makdimin as it's used in the Gemara. Also a very interesting question. The things I told you to look at. Then, if you could start already looking at Sochar Maskir and the Gemara Rashi Tosas Rambam. For the Rambam, just also add just a couple of Rambams in the Rambam Hilchos Bechira Perek Aleph Halacha Tes Vav and Tes Zayin and Yud Gimel Yud Zayin and Schira Zayin Aleph. I'll probably add things. Look at the Rishonim Alatah, the Maram Chalava, the Rabbeinu David, you know, Tos Rabbeinu Peretz. What is the nature of this argument about Socher, you know, and Maskir, right? Almi Mutal. I don't know if we'll get to it tomorrow, but certainly by Thursday. And then I'll decide exactly how much I want to do in this. What is this a debate about? Socher Maskir, is this a Chaschiris debate? Is it a Bali Rabbi Matze or Chametz debate? What exactly is, you know, this Chakira in the Gemara, you know, Almi Livdok? So we want to do that. I don't want to spend too much time, just I want to discuss it. Then we want to discuss the question of, you know, whether there's a Chazaka of Bedikas Chametz, and especially the problem of Vila Shaile and Nemanus, and then Tashlumin, you know, for